Okay. Hello.
Hi, Claudia.
Hi, Kathy.
We are here today in Claudia's home on my husband's birthday, Thursday, January 26, 2017. And Claudia's has graciously agreed to allow us to interview her for the church's oral history archival project. So, well, let's get started. Claudia, would you like to give us a little bit about your background?
Sure. I was not born here in Louisville. I was born in Western Kentucky in Madisonville, which is, at that time, it was a big part of the coal fields of Western Kentucky. Now I don't know how much actual coal mining's going on, but back in 1946 when I was born, it was. Uh-huh. And I was the oldest of five kids. My dad was a coal miner. And my mother, when she worked, which was seems like most of my life, was worked as a bookkeeper in various places in town.
Mm-hmm.
And then she was a hairdresser after that, which was really neat.
Which
she liked and we liked. My sisters and I liked. That was really cool. My own family is two now grown sons and my husband David, that I married in 1972. I think I've got that date right. when we married, we moved here to Louisville very soon after we married. And actually, I'd been living here as a single woman teaching.
Hmm.
And so David moved here to be with me. And we were looking, our getting into the Unitarian Church was interesting because we decided we needed to look for a church. I had become unchurched in college.
Mm-hmm.
I'd grown up in the Methodist Church, going every time the doors opened, and still love the Methodist Church, but in college had just decided I didn't believe in the theology.
Mm-hmm.
David and I started looking for a church, but really didn't think there was one that would fit our theology, and we found First Unitarian Church. So that's we participated a lot in the church. We brought our kids up in Sunday school, so we were religious education. We worked in religious education, both of us. I probably did more than David, but then I was always I guess a committee person. You know, I guess I just kind of gravitated toward working, with committees. So I was probably on just about every committee that you could name at First Unitarian and over the years, over many years. And when I was a working mother, I mean, I was a public school teacher all those years. I guess I'd have to say that because I was doing a lot of that, I have to give a lot of credit to David for somehow keeping our household together
and our kids
together and, you know, us together. So he did a great job with that. My early memories of the church are, you know, the interior of what it looked like. The outside, it didn't look so different because the four walls are the same, even though the roof line and a lot of that changed, and the steeple was higher and different. But the inside was different in that it was dark wood, you know, dark red carpeting down the main floor and down the main aisle. And then, traditional pews. I do have a memory of that, and I had a memory of it as any old church at that time. It was not air conditioned.
Oh.
And so in the summer, we closed.
Yeah.
So we just didn't have church in the summer, which actually, as a school teacher, I really liked.
Yeah, you were really off.
That was great.
Yeah.
I was off.
Everything,
so,
yeah.
Yeah, and I do remember when we would start back in September, right after Labor Day,
uh-huh.
that often, as we know in Kentucky, it's still pretty hot.
Pretty hot.
So we would have some pretty hot church services. I remember kind of sweat pouring down you during church service. Let's see. I do remember thinking that I was coming, that when we first came to First Unitarian, that I'd never heard of a Unitarian church, and mm-hmm. I had somehow heard, I don't know how, that they were pretty liberal,
mm-hmm.
and so I was expecting some really a weird service,
mm-hmm.
something really weird, and a lot of hippies sitting around. So it was a big surprise to me the first couple of Sundays that we went that there were a lot of older people there.
Yeah.
Not at all hippie type, yeah. dressed kind of normal.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, there were a few hippie types,
uh-huh.
but, you know, which would have been fine with me.
Yeah.
It was just a surprise.
Yeah.
It was kind of a normal, you know, a service not unlike my Methodist church.
Really?
That except for all of the Christian
Yeah.
things that we said and did mm-hmm. and believed.
Mm-hmm.
There were hymns.
Yeah.
And there were readings. And
mm-hmm.
so, you know, there was a sermon. And so it was all, that, I guess that was comforting to me because
mm-hmm.
I might have been scared off.
Yeah.
Had it been as weird as I thought it was. So,
uh-huh.
yeah. And you know, at first I think it's probably like in any church, I felt a little uncomfortable when we would go into coffee hour and I really didn't know anyone to talk to.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, I may be wrong,
mm-hmm.
I think we were not as good as a congregation
mm-hmm.
or as intentional back then about
mm-hmm.
making sure we go up to people and speak to them and make them feel welcome.
Oh, really?
As we are now.
And hmm.
There were a few people who did that,
mm-hmm.
but only very few.
Hmm.
I could count maybe, you know, on my hand.
Mm-hmm.
I hope we have done better, or mm-hmm. do better with that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, if you interviewed new people, you might find out.
Yeah.
Maybe we're not.
But, yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
it seems like we do better with that. So that's, you know, that's kind of my thinking. My kids went all through RE,
mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
and sometimes more willingly than others.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, they weren't the most, well, at least Jeff, he wasn't
yeah.
the most
uh-huh.
Compliant RE child.
Uh-huh.
But, you know.
Yeah.
But he's the one that's there now with his children,
yeah.
which is interesting.
Yeah. So when did you all join?
You know, I really don't know
mm-hmm.
that for sure. We must have started, we must have come the first times in 1973,
mm-hmm.
something like that. 73, 74.
Mm-hmm.
Then we had Jeff in 75.
Mm-hmm.
But I know we first visited
mm-hmm.
First U before we ever had Jeffrey.
Okay.
Not very long after we married in 72.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking it must have been something like 70.
So 70.
But I don't know exactly when we joined, you know?
So that means that Bob Reed was the minister.
He
then.
Was, yes.
Yeah.
So the ministers... these earlier ministers of Philip uh-huh. Smith and David Brown, I have no memory of. I didn't.
Yeah.
I never did meet them.
Mm-hmm.
So of course I knew Bob David and I both just had great fondness for Bob
mm-hmm.
and for Jean, his
mm-hmm.
wife.
Mm-hmm.
And I sang in the choir with Jean.
Oh, you did?
So, yeah, she was a choir member, and so I was really.
Mm-hmm.
really fond of her
mm-hmm.
and very fond of Bob. I do remember some of the, I guess you'd call, controversies.
Mm-hmm.
Now, but some of these things
mm-hmm.
I've that are here in the questions,
mm-hmm.
I kind of don't remember as being controversial in church. And I don't know if that's just because I wasn't aware.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, the busing issue.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was teaching, so I was very aware
yeah.
of the busing controversy, and I was very supportive of busing.
Mm-hmm.
And truly worked very hard in my classroom to prepare kids for that, mm-hmm. because I was teaching out in the Far East End in an almost all-white school.
And you were teaching middle school, right?
I was teaching middle school. Okay. So we were going to have kids bussed in from downtown, the Mazique area, the mm-hmm. Smoketown area. Mm-hmm. And then our kids that were going to be bussed were going to be bussed down to that area.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think in our school, we did a pretty good job of trying to prepare mm-hmm. kids for that and to be welcoming to the kids that came to our school. But back to the church. I was not aware that there was much controversy in the church.
Hmm.
And there might have been. Or that Bob, if Bob was taking a leadership role in that, I just don't remember it. I'm sure he was. I don't remember controversy about the Metropolitan Community Church. I know that they were meeting in our building,
mm-hmm.
and there may have been people upset, but if so... Mm-hmm. I didn't know it. And I don't remember what year that was when they first came to our building.
Mm-hmm. Were either any of these social justice issues topic of sermons during the service, or?
I cannot remember that. And I want to remind you of this, that those of us who were, if we were working in RE at the time,
we weren't
going to service.
That's right.
So my memory is of missing a lot of church service in my younger days because RE and church were going on at the same time.
The forums that they used to have on Sunday morning that used to be, were they
the
going
forums,
on? Yeah.
Yes.
Right.
They would. I think they were more likely to touch on these social justice issues than probably the sermons were.
Yeah.
I may be wrong because I missed a lot
of
sermons.
You were.
That's where I think, you know, I would have been aware, and maybe other people would have been, would have been involved in the whole forum thing. And of course, the forum thing gave much more opportunity for feedback and questions.
Yeah.
Because it was always people could ask questions and make comments, and that wasn't, our sermons didn't lend themselves
to that.
You didn't get that kind of feedback from how were people in the church feeling.
And the Metropolitan Community Church was an early attempt to, I'm not explaining it very well, but it's my understanding that it was an early attempt by the church to support efforts to support the gay community.
Gay community, absolutely.
Yeah, right. And this was the church, and it was a church, but they didn't have a building or something, right?
And, you could even say that was our congregation. And I don't know if there was a congregational vote on that. I do not recall that.
Okay.
It may have been, I would think, given our constitution, it could have been something that the board could have easily decided to do without a congregational vote would be my guess.
Okay.
Just the way the way the board works.
Mm-hmm.
But however that happened, looking back on it now, and I never really thought of it this way, is that could almost be seen as before welcoming congregation, we had actually made a step.
Yeah.
It's different. We weren't saying you're welcome to come to our services, but of course I never doubted that anyone was welcome to come to our services.
Right.
And I do remember when one of our members stood up in a service, and this was while Bob Reed was on a sabbatical.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that clearly.
Mm-hmm.
And one of our members stood up and talked about coming out and that she was gay.
During the service.
And I don't remember, I don't know if I can't remember, it seems logical that maybe the service was about that maybe someone was speaking about that issue.
Mm-hmm.
And then she stood up and said that. And I remember being So, first of all, shocked, that, mm-hmm. not that she was gay or mm-hmm. that, but shocked that anyone would be brave enough to stand up and say that. I mean, now, you mm-hmm. know, that's like,
yeah.
nobody would think anything that. But at that time, I was so surprised
yeah.
that she was brave enough to say that. And I was so pleased and surprised at the acceptance
mm-hmm.
and the congregation. I mean, everybody was sitting there was...
Mm-hmm.
After she said that, was very supportive and mm-hmm. came up to her and mm-hmm. hugged her and mm-hmm. all of that. And then I remember at some point, and I don't know why Bob and I were talking about it,
mm-hmm.
but at some point Bob and I were discussing this when he was back from his sabbatical.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that he was very close to this particular member.
Yeah.
And he was saying how it had worried him.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the work situation, because of her employment situation.
Oh, sure.
And it when he heard that she had come out publicly, I think he knew.
Yeah.
You know, they had talked about this
sure.
before. That he was concerned about her hmm. work situation. And of course, I was always so naive about everything. I never was like, oh, I never thought of that. You know, oh gosh, yes.
Uh-huh.
That could be a really dangerous
yeah.
thing back then.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so yeah, that... But I don't know if that particular situation that occurred
mm-hmm.
was anywhere around this metropolitan community church issue. I don't even, you know, I don't know if they happened at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
The whole time, I am terrible about remembering times or years. I have no.
Oh.
In fact, all of my kids' childhood is totally like gone. I have no memory of any of it. So, you know, it's crazy. The Haywood House acquisition, I do remember that, and I remember being very supportive of it because
mm-hmm.
I had little children,
mm-hmm.
and they, at that point, I guess toddlers, which I guess my kids were probably toddler age,
mm-hmm.
We were taking kids into the minister's study.
Oh.
During church, because that's the only place we had for little kids, and they were, you know, they were playing in the study, crawling around under his desk,
mm-hmm.
and you know, we RE teachers for little kids were, or parents. I don't know how we were doing that. If parents were taking care of those kids, or if there was actually an RE
mm-hmm.
teacher. Seems like there were lots of times that parents would sign up for one Sunday a month,
that,
you know,
yeah.
And keep the kids in. There was a time that we also had Ari over in a building that I think is no longer there, in mm-hmm. What's the library parking lot there,
beside oh, yeah.
on York Street.
Mm-hmm.
There was a building over there that we leased mm-hmm. to do some Sunday school in.
There's a photograph of 1966. There's where that library, where that parking lot is. There's a building.
A building there.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So that we leased that for maybe a year or two.
Oh.
I don't remember.
Uh-huh.
For maybe there was one room or something like that we took kids over to.
Uh-huh.
But and I don't remember when that what year that was. But it might all of those might have been late 70s, because
mm-hmm.
my kids were born in 75 and 78.
Oh, okay.
So it might have been late 70s. But anyway, so when the chance to buy Haywood House came up, again, Bob was on sabbatical. So, you know, it's kind of, at that time, I think, and I don't know if other people have said this, I think during Bob's ministry, and also I think even during Richard's,
mm-hmm.
I think you could call our church mm-hmm. what they call a pastoral church.
Mm-hmm.
The pastor was, the minister was certainly the guiding hand,
mm-hmm.
even though there was a board of trustees,
mm-hmm.
Guiding in terms of kind of having his fingers in everything.
Right. Oh, okay. Is that what that means?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's
yeah.
one thing it means to me.
Okay.
You know, so it not so program driven,
mm-hmm.
not so committee, even though we had committees,
mm-hmm.
not quite so committee driven.
Mm-hmm.
So for the board and the church to decide to purchase that building when the minister wasn't there.
Wow.
To
oh.
be a part of that decision
oh, yeah.
was kind of a big step,
yeah.
I think, for
mm-hmm.
people. I wasn't on the board, but I remember I was one of the parents pushing for us to do something to expand our RE space.
Yeah.
Because it really was pretty bad.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And at that time, our RE numbers were such that we really needed
yeah.
space. So then we, after we purchased that building, of course it was in horrible.
Was it occupied when you bought it?
Yeah, the mm-hmm. woman who owned it had it had been in her family probably since she'd been a child, I guess.
Oh, mm-hmm.
So it had been a long time in her family, and it was really pretty. At that point, she was, I don't know if she'd ever been married or not,
mm-hmm.
but she was living there alone, except that she rented out rooms. It was a rooming house.
Oh, it was a rooming house.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so if you can imagine mm-hmm. an old rooming house
yeah.
in the northern edge of mm-hmm. old Louisville, mm-hmm. You know, the rooms up there were just someone's room,
mm-hmm.
and they were, it was pretty bad
yeah.
when we took it over. And we had amazing people who worked really hard on trying to get it into a state that we could use it. For instance, we moved the, I think the church office was moved there, but maybe that wasn't until after the fire. Maybe,
mm-hmm.
I don't remember exactly
mm-hmm.
when that. We did have architects come in and do a preschool, nursery or preschool, I guess, room
mm-hmm.
that was really beautifully done and designed
mm-hmm.
off of a back part of that house.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of it, our volunteers, people like Jess Schreiber,
mm-hmm.
Charlie Mitchell,
mm-hmm.
these men that were kind of probably fairly newly retired at the time,
mm-hmm.
had expertise.
Mm-hmm.
They got up on tall ladders and cleaned
wow.
and painted and did everything they could to make those rooms usable.
Mm-hmm.
And so
mm-hmm.
when the fire, after the fire, and the fact that that building wasn't damaged
mm-hmm.
was great, because
mm-hmm.
we were then able to move
yeah.
the church, I guess that is when we moved the church office and moved some of our Sunday school rooms in there.
Mm-hmm.
We were able, some more of our Sunday school rooms, we were able to use it. It was usable.
Mm-hmm.
Until then, and of course then when the church was rebuilt, we were able to incorporate that building and really do a much nicer job cleaning it up and painting
yeah.
it and making it,
yeah.
and making
yeah.
it beautiful.
Oh,
so,
gosh.
So, yeah, so it was, but it really turned out to be, thank goodness we had it
oh,
after
yeah.
the fire, because it was really, you know, we really needed it.
Did you all have a capital campaign to buy the building? Do you remember?
You know, that is a good question. I don't recall,
mm-hmm.
but it seems like
I didn't know if they took out a loan
like we would
or
have
something.
Had to.
I think you did. I think.
Yeah, it seems like we would have had
yeah.
to do that, and maybe.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the capital. There was a capital campaign at the time of the fire,
mm-hmm.
and I know that Penny and John headed that up.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Well.
Lauterbach.
No.
Nader.
Naders. The Naders
mm-hmm.
had.
Oh, the Naders did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I can't. There must have been one when we
mm-hmm.
bought that building.
Mm-hmm.
I just have no
yeah.
memory. Again, I was so young. You know, all that just went over my head. It's like, oh, we're
yeah.
buying the building.
Oh,
yeah.
you were married.
Yeah.
You had kids. You were going to school.
Yeah.
You were teaching. Yeah, you were kind of
yeah.
busy.
So I don't remember how that was done.
So what about going back to the social justice issues, what would you like to say about your thoughts and reactions to the church's choice about giving sanctuary to the refugees from El Salvador?
Well, I felt really struck. Again, I was young.
You were young, and you had your kids,
yeah, you know,
and you were teaching.
But I felt really strongly. I remember we had met at least one.
That was in the early 80s,
okay,
right?
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, right.
At least one and maybe more congregational meetings.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, but I do remember the kind of final one where the final vote was taken. I was really in favor of us
mm-hmm.
offering sanctuary.
Mm-hmm.
And actually the vote went for offering. The
mm-hmm. Oh, really?
More people voted for it than against it. However,
mm-hmm.
there had already been a decision made, and this is why I'm saying there might have been another congregational meeting, or maybe this was a board decision,
mm-hmm.
I don't remember. But there was a decision that we would not offer sanctuary unless the vote to offer it was, it had to be more than a majority. I think it was three quarters.
Mm-hmm.
And so we did. So it was more than a majority,
mm-hmm.
but it was not the 3/4. So therefore, even though a majority of people wanted
right.
to offer sanctuary, not we
enough.
Didn't do it. It was
yeah.
not enough. And my memory is that Bob Reed was very in favor of offering sanctuary.
What was the motion? Can you give me a little bit of the details? Like, did they have so many people could come and stay, or they would stay in people's homes?
This is my memory.
Uh-huh.
I don't think that there was any thought that there would be a lot of people.
Okay.
But that the sanctuary would be offered in the actual church building.
Okay.
Because it wouldn't, if you had someone in your home.
Yeah.
That
right.
would not be sanctuary, because the police, if this person was here illegally.
Right.
And I guess, do you want to take that?
No, it's okay.
I guess that the thought was that these people were going to come illegally
uh-huh.
and be put in some safe space. And
mm-hmm.
the churches
mm-hmm.
were safe spaces in that we wouldn't have expected the police to come into a church. Part of that's, I guess, separation of church and state.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea is that a family
mm-hmm.
or a couple of people or whatever would come to a church.
Mm-hmm.
What I don't remember is if other churches in Louisville or in the U.S. were offering sanctuary. My guess is they would be. I can't imagine why we would be in the forefront
here in
Kentucky.
So, yeah.
So anyway, I mean, maybe a church like St. William's
mm-hmm.
did that. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so that was the idea, is that
okay.
they would actually stay in your church.
Mm-hmm.
Which was another reason that I couldn't see why people who were against it
mm-hmm.
and who stood up and said things like, this could cost me my job. I mean,
mm-hmm.
if your church
mm-hmm.
is putting someone up in their building,
mm-hmm.
what does that have to do with you individually
mm-hmm.
and your job?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't get that. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, clearly some people really had that fear,
mm-hmm.
you know. So,
strong comments from people that were opposed to it to sway it so that you didn't get the 3/4?
Well, that's the way I looked at it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there were some strong comments. And, you know, there were people who were against it and spoke against it just purely because, well, this is against the law. And we're not, you know, why would we do something that's against the law to take in someone who is illegally here or whatever. So, you know, you know, I guess you might have, I don't remember those arguments, but I guess there would have been people who could have said, well, we offer counseling and support for people who were draft evaders.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess you could make the case that was against the law. And
mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't remember. I do know that Bob Reed was very active in
mm-hmm.
that social justice movement in Louisville, but I wasn't here then.
Mm-hmm.
That was, you know, that was the late 60s, early 70s, that
mm-hmm.
more of that was going on, and I was in college in the late,
mm-hmm.
you know, graduated in 68, so, and again, was a young, you know, young teacher starting
mm-hmm.
my career and
mm-hmm.
had strong feelings against the Vietnam War, but
mm-hmm.
It wasn't in this church,
right.
you know, at that time. So I really wasn't here for that, or for our church's leadership in civil rights.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was
mm-hmm.
I wasn't here then. So,
mm-hmm.
so
in that then, when Bob Reed, so you were there with Bob Reed during that crazy time
mm-hmm.
when the church burned.
Yeah, Bob Reed had just left.
Oh, that's right. He had
yeah.
left.
He had just
he had
left.
An interim.
He
yeah.
had gone to New York, to the church in New York. I forgot the name of that church. But anyway, I'm sure when the church burned, he felt really torn
mm-hmm.
that he had left
mm.
and then all, you know, then this terrible tragedy, if you will, took place. And we did, we had an interim at that time, but Virginia Knowles.
Mm-hmm.
But I will tell you that from, of course, at the actual time of the church burning, I can give you a little anecdote. I remember that, I think it was a Friday night, a Saturday morning early, really, I guess it called them Fire and Burn.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was a Saturday morning. The phone rang in our house. Well, of course, on Saturday mornings, we all slept in.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
two teachers.
I was up at 5:15 usually. This must have been like 6 o'clock or 7 o'clock. The phone rang.
Late in the day. Really late.
So I got up and answered the phone, and this voice said, you know, they were from the Courier Journal, and they were calling to get my reaction to the fire down on 4th and York. And I was like, what? And I guess I've said something like, what?
I'm like, oh my
gosh.
What
are you talking about?
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm sure this person probably was, whoever this reporter was kind of felt awful to be, you know, to be telling me, because I had not, no one had called me. But I wasn't on the board at that time. I had been on the board maybe a few years, but I've been the board president
mm-hmm.
a couple of years before that. Maybe that's how that reporter had my name.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know
mm-hmm.
why they would even call me, but anyway, they did.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I was just stunned and remember.
Oh, I can't imagine.
Remember thinking, you know, the first thing in my, because I had been on the board before and you know, it's when you get on the board that you learn about finances that you did. I'd never really realized before
mm-hmm.
what kind of a tight budget we ran.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I remember thinking, the first thing in my head was, oh no, what will we do? We don't have any money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I thank goodness that in what I don't think I said that, but my brain was just going,
oh my gosh,
we don't have any money. What is going to happen?
Yeah.
So, of course, I had no idea about insurance policies.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't
yeah.
know what we had in insurance. So, and didn't find that out till a little later. So, David, and I guess David went down. I stayed home with the kids.
Mm-hmm.
But David went down, you know, it was freezing cold. He took some great photographs.
Yeah.
And then, you know, then we may do for a while. Richard actually came after the fire and actually said, he says that he was deciding not to come until the fire and thought he could really, you know, have a... be a good influence.
Yeah.
I think that he was probably right about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm glad he didn't
mm-hmm.
he didn't desert us at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But
there were a lot of meetings.
There were a lot of meetings, and some of the early meetings were like house meetings. I remember we had one at our house
mm-hmm.
where we talked about just pretty informally, but the board was really great about
mm-hmm.
knowing what kinds of questions to ask. But we talked about in these small group meetings,
yeah.
maybe 12 or 15 people. One big question was, well, do we sell this lot and move
mm-hmm.
and leave downtown and go to some other, go to a suburb?
Mm-hmm.
And that was pretty... seems like there were very few people who thought we should do that.
Really?
That was pretty much a given through all those meetings. I was led to understand that, you know, as they kept track of that, that people were saying, no,
mm-hmm.
you know, we really need to stay
mm-hmm.
downtown. I mean, partly probably because we even at that time, like now, we had a number of people who were Southern Indiana people.
Yeah, oh,
I mean,
true.
In some ways, it didn't make sense to move out to the East End. We'd already started years ago a satellite church.
Oh, Thomas Jefferson
was there.
Right.
And so, you know, where would we have gone? Maybe
mm-hmm.
the South End, but we have so many people in the Highlands that didn't
yeah.
make sense to move away from that. So.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, I'm sure there were people who thought, well, gosh, we could have a much more interesting modern building if
mm-hmm.
we didn't, you know, try to stay
mm-hmm.
within that small lot.
Mm-hmm.
So there, but for the most part, it, you know, came down to,
mm-hmm.
yeah, we were going to stay in Louisville. I want to watch my time. So anyway, as it turned out, we had that decision, and then there was the decision to elect a building committee.
And that's...
And,
where it started.
Yeah, and so
how did you get the job?
Well, people could anybody who wanted to apply to be elected could run. And so I did decide, Dave and I talked about it, and I said, you know, I think I'd really like to be on that committee and have a say in this. So I put my name in, and several other people did. And the way that the board decided to do it is, I think four or five people would be elected, and two or three people would be chosen by the board. So that gave the board the ability to put on people if they were afraid, you know, that, you know, it just turned into a popularity contest of a bunch of people who, you know, wouldn't be very useful. And it didn't turn out that way. But so there were a number of us that were elected, and then there were several people that were put on by the board. And we, when we started meeting, I had no thought of being the chair of the committee.
Really?
Because, for one thing, again, I was a younger member. And in my mind, there were a couple of people, mainly Nell McLaughlin and Eric Takow, who were very knowledgeable, very influential in the church, really understood all kinds of things that I didn't understand, that seemed to me should be the chairpersons. However, neither one of them wanted to be chairperson. And they nominated, one of them, I don't know which one, nominated me. And so I was quickly elected as chairperson. But I even understood then the reason. Nell and Eric were very influential on that committee. And partly, they worked better. They both saw themselves as working better as not being the chair. At being able to do what they wanted to do. And they were right. I mean, and things I'm good at, or was at the time, I'm not anymore, but I'm good at putting an agenda together, making sure we follow an agenda, you know, getting stuff done, the nitty-gritty things done that need to be done to keep a committee going, you know. And so, yeah, I could do those things. But really, the big understandings of some things that went on, they were, they did that better, and they did that better without being the chair. So that's kind of the way that played out. It was, put her in the chair position so we can really we can really do the work.
And so you were when the building committee was established, had they companies had already been hired?
Nothing had been done.
Because the building, I mean, the area had to be cleared.
Well, that committee, that was that committee's job.
Really?
Was to do everything.
So you had to, the committee had to be formed pretty quickly because it...
Yeah, I think we were formed that June, probably.
Okay.
That, let's see, it took place in, the fire was in...
December.
Let's see, there was a construction company called in to shore up the walls, you know, to shore up that big gable on 4th Street so it wouldn't fall out onto 4th Street, and to start clearing things away. And then we also did call in an architect, Ed Lynn, I think was his name, L-Y-N-N, from the UUA, who's a minister and an architect, to just give us some advice.
I think your picture was in the paper with him. Right.
So he was just, he really gave us...
Yeah, that's great.
Good advice on what things you need to ask, you know, look for in an architect, things you need to think about as you start into this process. So that was good. I had never met an architect in my life. I had no idea really what architects did.
Wow.
I mean, I knew they designed buildings. That was it. I had no clue.
Isn't that something?
So we went, we interviewed architect firms, and we asked people for ideas for firms. Especially local ones, because we preferred to stay local if we could. And we interviewed them, and I think we got it down to three. Well, no, let me back that. They sent us information.
Right.
So we read all their information, looked at pictures of their buildings, called references, all that kind of thing. And then we narrowed it down to three, and they did a presentation for us.
Okay.
They actually came in with a slideshow, talked about things they did, and then we actually went out and looked at their buildings and talked to people mm-hmm. who were living in their building, you know, mm-hmm. churches yeah. and okay. businesses who were, you know, who were mm-hmm. using their buildings hmm. and talked to people who had worked with them in the building of these buildings. So it was a pretty long process. You can imagine that took us several months to get through all that. And then once we picked Grossman, Chapman, Kingsley, which was their name at the time, mm-hmm. Then we they helped us. Well, then we worked for months mm-hmm. On just the design.
And that was a collective, the congregational effort, in a way.
It was really, here's the way it worked. It was really amazing to me.
I think this is
what they did. But what they did is, first of all, we had three congregational meetings uh-huh. with the architects there, and each meeting was designed to discuss a particular topic.
Okay.
And I can't remember those topics. I know one of them was history or historical perspective.
Right.
I don't remember the other two. Mm-hmm. No, one of them might have been like theology. I mm-hmm. don't know. Mm-hmm. But that would be something that you would be able to find in some of the materials yeah. that Archives has there.
Right.
So what I expected to happen, again, this shows how little I knew. I mean, mm-hmm. I expected we'd go in, the architects would tell us all about this topic.
Yeah.
And what really happened is the architect said, here's the topic, mm-hmm. and they maybe threw out a couple of questions mm-hmm. that we ought to consider. Now, tell us what you think. Mm-hmm. And they really hardly said a word.
Isn't that something?
They sat there and wrote, and people stood up and said, well, I think this mm-hmm. is important to me. I think we should consider this. We should keep those old walls. We should tear down the whole thing mm-hmm. and start anew. I mean, there were mm-hmm. all kinds of ideas, you mm-hmm. know. And so, we want this to be a building that is... can be used by people in the community, or we want this to be a building that's really for us, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There were just so many, we want our sanctuary to look just like it did, mm-hmm. or we don't want, there were just all kinds of ideas.
How did the architects and the church members make decisions?
Well,
if there was a spectrum of opinions.
Well, the church members didn't make those decisions.
Okay.
That was really a building committee decision.
Okay.
But we relied on architects to come with us after listening to all this. Mm-hmm. Let me back up and tell you one other thing they did. They had all the stuff they listened to and took notes on. Then they, and of course we were there listening too, and we were kind of you could get a sense of, is this an outlying crazy position that one person came up with, uh-huh. Or did most people say, we should keep our four walls. Mm-hmm. We want this to still look like, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, most people said that.
Yeah. Okay.
Or we don't want this all torn down. We believe in preservation in mm-hmm. old Louisville. Mm-hmm. And preservation was a big deal back then. People talked about that a lot. There were a lot of preservation issues back then. Mm-hmm. My own personal feeling is that if we'd torn everything down, we would have had so many preservation people on our backs.
Okay.
That it would have been a nightmare.
Yeah, yeah.
And the other thing is that our architects were very preservation-minded. I don't know that we knew that mm-hmm. when we hired them, but they were. Mm-hmm. They turned out to be. But anyway, back to that. The other thing they did is then every possible group in the church, everybody that ever met there mm-hmm. for anything, mm-hmm. RE classes, clubs, mm-hmm. anybody that did mm-hmm. anything, they were given forms. Mm-hmm. And you, with all these questions on them,
wow.
You probably can find those in that program.
Oh, I've seen them.
So everybody filled out what they thought they needed.
Yeah.
Space needs, basically.
Right.
That's what that was about.
Right.
And turn those into the architects. So based on all that, the architects started to bring designs and ideas to the building committee. Mm-hmm. What about this or what about that? And I remember the first time they talked about... they were talking about the sanctuary mm-hmm. and opening up, having a wall that opened up.
Yeah.
But they were still thinking of the sanctuary being oriented the same way it had been. Mm-hmm. And I remember we were there looking at that, and I think it was Eric or somebody said, well, the wall's a great idea, that we can expand the space, but then why don't we orient it the other way? If we're going to open the wall. And it was like, oh. Yeah, you know, so they went back and oriented it toward, well, at that time we were thinking of orienting it toward toward Fourth, which we can do. We hadn't really thought about turning it toward York. Once we got the chairs in there, of course, we ourselves figured that out. You know, that didn't take an arc. You know, it was all of a sudden we were like, oh, this is one way we could do this, and we really like this.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
You know, but there were people who really thought the idea of chairs
was
a horrible idea.
They
were going to be noisy. The hard floor was going to be noisy. And all that really hadn't played out at all. But anyway, so there were, the architects would come to the building committee and say, we're thinking about doing this. And we'd say, yeah, or no, but what about, you know. They did not, during all of that process of designing, the architects were not in contact with the congregation.
Okay.
And the congregation could not call the architects.
Okay.
That was made very clear to them. You may not be calling them. You call them.
You can talk to any of the committee. Yeah.
We had a couple of big things in my memory. One was that committee was a congregational committee and it did not answer to the board. And we had a board president who did not like that. And he called a congregational meeting to get that changed.
Oh.
And he failed.
All right.
And basically, I mean, that would have not made sense. And our argument was, if we have to go to the board every time we make a decision, then this process is going to be so slowed down because the board's meeting once a month. We were meeting weekly.
Yeah.
For long meetings.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
2 and 3 hours. You
oh,
know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we were like, we can, you know, we're not, basically, you know, I and a couple other board members were thinking, we're not doing this.
It seems like what Joanne Johnson explained was that there was the church work and then there was the church, the building work, the church building work. And that was important because the church was still going on.
Yeah.
You know, they had a congregation to take care of. And Richard was, and then there was another parallel world of building the church.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I felt like that, why would a board want to, I'm not saying the whole board wanted to do that, but this, we had a president.
Yeah.
A president who was an interesting character.
Yeah.
And he was the kind of person who really didn't like the fact that there were decisions being made.
Yeah.
He wasn't a part of.
Mm-hmm.
No, but in my mind, he had enough to do.
And he had board representation on the building committee, right? Weren't there, I thought there were representatives on the building committee from the board.
There might have been people on the building committee who were board members just by happenchance.
Yeah.
Well, there were the three or four people that the board put on the
Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't know that they ever saw themselves as representatives.
Not representative, but they had, but there was a bit of a...
Yeah, the board had put them on the committee.
Right.
So anyway, that did not, that the congregation said no.
Yeah.
The building committee is doing their own, you know, they don't have to come and get the boards okay every time they have to make a decision. It's basically what he was, where he was headed. So we didn't, so that was kind of an upset.
It wasn't your all's decision, it was the church decisions to find a place to meet temporarily. And
right, we had nothing to
had
do
nothing
with that.
To do
and,
that.
I, and that was a, Richard was a big part of that.
Yeah.
Richard wanted, I think he wanted us to go to the West End. You know, he always felt like that there was much more we needed to do and could do in terms of communing with the African-American population.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, there were people who hated that idea, and that was not, you know, some of them found out that was not a problem.
Mm-hmm.
We ended up, once we moved to that church, then we ended up having our meetings there, too. So we would go down there for our meetings at night, you know. It never was a problem. And it was a lovely church, you know. At least the sanctuary was very lovely. It was fine, you know. It worked out fine for us. I think it was a good move in many ways.
Did the architect act as like the go-between or the one who was in charge of all of the different contractors?
Let me we'll move to that. The to me, the most painful time was after the final design was okayed. And that did, and the church did come in and okay that. You know, there was a little, they, we built a little model, we had floor plans, we had this is, you know, this is what it's going to look like. Then I believe that was a vote. And so, and every, and you know, people did, it was, people loved the, loved it. It was more than we could have ever imagined. Still, it was still kind of hard to imagine what the inside, for me it was, I still couldn't quite imagine what the inside would be like, but, you know, I had an idea of what the outside was going to look like, how things were going to work inside, but anyway, then we started looking for a contractor, and for, this is when the really painful time came, when we, for me, when we, probably for the whole committee, when we found our contractor, and we hired Weir, and they put a manager on site who was the main manager of the building, who worked very closely with the architects, and the architect put, the architect company put Leo Clare as the project architect. John Grossman was the design architect. So even though the whole, he did most of the design. I'm sure there were people in the office that helped him with it. But he did most of the design, and then Leo did most of the work on site with the builder. And but the, and the builder, of course, then they got their own subcontractors to do different things. And the architects worked with them on people they wanted and they knew, et cetera, et cetera. But once the builder comes on, then the builder looks at these, and you probably know this because you've done a lot of work in your own house, but you know, the builder looks at all this and says, well, this is our, the architect has said, this is what we think we, you know, this, this building that we've designed, we can do with the amount of money you have. Remember, we had like $2 million worth of insurance money. On the other hand, we'd lost, we'd lost a quarter of that in the bond market because we had a group of men who were in charge of investing, and I say men because it was all men at that time, who were in charge of investing our money, and they put it almost all in bonds. The bond market fell at, the bottom fell of the bond market, and we lost $225,000 or $250,000
Oh my goodness.
And we couldn't sit, because we're going to be spending this in the next 2 or 3 years, it's not like you can sit and wait for 10 years for it to come back. So, so we got clobbered. So that was a big painful thing. Therefore, having a capital campaign was important at that time because we lost such a big chunk of money. What a disaster. It was horrible.
Anyway. Awful.
So, whatever, you know. So, so then, you know, an architect says, we can do this for you, the amount of money you have. And then the builder comes in and looks at it and says, well, no, we can't. It's really going to cost this much money. So then you start, we spent months deciding what to cut. It was horrible. I went home from every meeting. I would get in the car and start driving home. And I would cry all the way home. I'd get home, you know, I'd get straightened up, I'd get in bed, Dave would go to sleep, and I'd cry again for another hour. I cried myself to sleep most nights during that part of the process. It just killed me. It just killed me. You know, now, and they were just such nitty gritty little things that other, you know, the rest of the congregation had no idea about, and went into that beautiful building and had no idea that any these cuts even happened. And thank goodness. They don't. Well, thank goodness they don't know. I'm glad. You know, but I know. And we, I was at a New Year's Eve party, and Bob Ballard and I were talking about that experience. This last New Year's Eve, and he said, you know, I think about what it would have been like to have that wainscoting all around that sanctuary. And I say, yeah, I know, I think of that too.
You know,
I always say, I think about what it would have been like to have that kitchen L come out. A whole nother section of that kitchen was going to come out back there. It would have been a third again as big as it is now. And, you know, I think of that and I just, you know, I think, oh, dang. But, you know, it, It's not stuff that most people know about. So it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, we did a lot of cutting. And then Weir started building, and they built it in 9 months.
Wow, that's incredible.
They were really incredible. Yeah, once they got going, they really did.
Mm.
I thought they were great. I thought they were a great contract firm. I love the guy that we, the main guy that we worked with. And, you know,
well,
they're wonderful.
And how did Weir and the say, for example, the windows there while they were building the windows, the beautiful stained glass windows, were they growing at the same time, or did Weir have to know what Icorn was doing with the windows? And
no, because they were able to put clear windows in every place first.
Oh, okay.
Now, actually, I think that those York Street windows, I'm wrong. The 4th Street, the big windows, the 4th Street windows. I'm pretty sure, although we could go double check, but I think those were all included in the in our building cost.
Okay.
At least the big ones, the two big ones up there, that what had been doors.
Right, right.
I think those were included in the building cost. And what happened is we looked at two or three or four stained glass window artists who sent us their work and said, I'm really interested in doing this.
Mm-hmm.
And so we chose Julia Wyrick. We saw her stuff and we loved it.
It's beautiful.
And so we chose her. And then what she did is she planned out the rest of the windows, not knowing if we would ever have the money to do them or not.
Really?
But, you know, of course, we learned a lot about what other people know.
Mm-hmm.
We still got you okay here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We learned that when you put things out and say to people, we want to do this and this and this.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to give to it? If it's for a certain thing, people will give money.
Right.
So those windows went like that in terms of people saying, yeah, my family wants to buy this, or we want to do this in memory of so-and-so, or yes, we want to buy the whole steeple in memory of such and such.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that was a lot of money.
Yeah.
You know, or we'll pay for the whole back patio. Of course, that was the Binghams.
Mm-hmm.
That did that, who weren't even church members.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so those kinds of things, if you put them out there, people will surprisingly pay for.
I think there's a brochure with drawings.
That
they could pay for.
And, you know, Carol Toby and the aesthetics, that she would really kind of manage all that aesthetic stuff. As we neared the end of the building process, when we started to see, we need these things, you know, then she and a group put that together.
I've always thought this was just incredible, because nobody ever joined that church to build a church.
I know.
Really?
Yeah. So anyway, but it was exciting for me personally. It was like a fabulous college course that I didn't have to pay for. That I just could go and learn and learn and learn and just think. It was an amazing, wonderful experience.
You're glad you did it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I learned so much, and it was just, you know, it was just great.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, I guess there weren't huge obstacles. I remember our making decisions pretty much by consensus. I don't remember taking votes and doing anything real formal. I think we did most everything by consensus. And we agreed upon almost everything, because a lot of things, especially when we were cutting, you know, were painful, but we knew we had to do them.
Yeah.
You know, there was a money issue that we had to do. There were some things. There were people on the committee who wanted to be more environmentally conservative than we felt like we had the money to be.
Yeah.
For instance, to completely one thing we talked about seriously was to completely insulate all of Haywood House. That would have been really wonderful.
Yeah.
But the cost of doing that, of pulling down all, you know, those inside walls and putting all that insulation in it, we just didn't feel like because we were cutting mm-hmm. all this other stuff, we just didn't feel like we could afford it.
Did you think about the, was there much controversy about replacing the 4th Street doors with glass and reconfiguring the entrance? Or was it, was there ever a time where the York Street door was going to be considered the main entrance? And it, because I've heard different.
Well, I think we might have thought that would happen. Mm-hmm. You know, that mm-hmm. those doors had been there since the beginning of the church, but hadn't been used for no telling how many years.
Oh, really?
Because that tower room was just where they just stored big ladders.
It was storage.
It was storage. Nobody
Since
the time I've been there,
I
don't know when that York Street door had stopped being used. Years ago.
Okay.
So that was just an old, empty, cold storage room.
Mm-hmm.
So once we came to the conclusion
mm-hmm.
that if you're going to have a wall to open
mm-hmm.
up,
mm-hmm.
if what we decided was our social hall,
mm-hmm.
then wouldn't make sense mm-hmm. to open a wall and reconfigure and have the front of your church mm-hmm. down at that wall.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Once we realized it only made sense to open a wall and have the mm-hmm. configuration on the other end, mm-hmm. then there really wasn't much. I mean, you obviously couldn't have a door there.
Yeah.
And
right.
big windows that covered up what we considered at that point the ugly 800 building.
Oh, yeah.
No, we didn't want to look at that. So once we realized we could, you know, cover that up, not really look at that, have a big, beautiful window there,
yeah,
and have the church oriented that way,
yeah,
the sanctuary oriented that way, then it was like, oh, well, cool.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we could, but I don't think it ever, mm-hmm. at that point, I don't think it ever occurred to us that the back alley would be, mm-hmm. I think we thought that would be the daytime entrance to the office,
mm-hmm.
obviously,
mm-hmm.
but not that it would be where most people come to church came in. I don't think we thought that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's turned out that way.
Yeah.
And it's turned out that that's been one of the real complaints
mm-hmm.
that I've heard about the building is mm-hmm. that you can't find a door mm-hmm. to get in. You know,
so. I shouldn't record this, but that has been my experience with many churches.
Oh, really?
I can't get in them. Round and around.
Yeah.
But I won't name names.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, but I think it's a legitimate complaint. It's kind of hard to find
mm-hmm.
find the door. You think it's going to be there on the front, you know,
yeah.
on the fourth, and it isn't.
No.
So, yeah.
Would you like to say anything about Richard or the Women's Alliance?
Women's Alliance, I don't have. I just remember that.
Mm-hmm.
I remember it coming back into being.
Mm-hmm.
At least that's the way I thought about
mm-hmm.
it.
So it wasn't very active when you first joined?
Yeah, I don't remember. Maybe there were people in it, but I don't even remember any mm-hmm. it even existing
mm-hmm.
until Joan Beal and a group of women. Joan seemed to me took the lead,
yeah.
But there were, I'm sure, other people who were in the lead too.
Mm-hmm.
Reinstated it,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
I don't even know if I joined it at first. I can't remember. I've never been a big women's group joiner,
mm-hmm.
but I'm seeing now in my older age the value of that. So, but yeah, so
put me on that list.
Yeah, so uh-huh. you know, at some point I didn't wait too long.
No.
At some point I joined, and really I'm glad, and I. You
uh-huh.
know, I like the way that it's
uh-huh.
that it's functioned and organized. I've liked it. As far as Richard, you know,
mm-hmm.
I was not on Richard's committee that chose him. You know,
mm-hmm.
I wasn't on the search committee.
Mm-hmm.
But I do remember going with Phoebe Gibson, and I believe Phoebe had been on a search committee,
mm-hmm.
I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
But Phoebe and I went to GA right after we had called Richard. So
mm-hmm.
I guess we called him in the spring. I don't even know how they,
mm-hmm.
I guess, yeah, we called, he probably came in and did his
mm-hmm.
candidating week or whatever,
mm-hmm.
and then we voted and called him in the spring. And we went to GA, it was in Rochester, New York, and Richard was doing some session.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't a session, it was a service, you know, how
yeah.
they have different ministers
yeah.
doing
mm-hmm.
services on these weeknights.
Mm-hmm.
And so we went, And I just thought it was, what he did was poetic. I don't remember even now what it was about, but mm-hmm. I remember just being really impressed and mm-hmm. thrilled to meet him, which makes me think maybe I didn't was, I don't know why, maybe I didn't meet him the week
mm-hmm.
he was candidating here. Maybe I missed that service.
Mm-hmm. You were too busy with the building committee.
I know. That's true. I could have been.
Yeah, and your
absolutely.
Kids and school and
yeah. So anyway, mm-hmm. so I that's a nice memory. I remember getting to hear Richard there mm-hmm. and thinking, wow, I really do like mm-hmm. you know his sermons.
Mm-hmm.
But probably Richard was a little too. For me, mm-hmm. a little too intellectual mm-hmm. in his sermons.
Yeah, oh
you know,
yeah.
Not as a mm-hmm. person. He's a very down-to-earth, fun person.
Uh-huh.
But his sermons were probably a little too intellectual for me. I'm pretty sure that a lot of them went over my head. Mm-hmm. But again, during Richard's time here, mm-hmm. we had RE mm-hmm. during church.
Mm-hmm.
So if indeed I was teaching RE,
sure.
I was not in that many church services.
Oh.
By that time, I had kind of moved from doing so much RE into doing more committee, board, policy type stuff. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, occasionally mm-hmm. I was involved in RE. So.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm very fond of Richard and Joan, and mm-hmm. been to visit them a couple of times mm-hmm. in Maine, and mm-hmm. you know, just feel like when they moved, I felt like I just lost a dear, dear friend in Joan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I still mourn the mm-hmm. fact that Joan's not here
mm-hmm.
for me to talk to. We Skype or mm-hmm. FaceTime every now and then.
Oh, good.
So we mm-hmm. can actually talk to one another and look each
but
other.
But it's not the same, though.
It's not the same.
Yeah.
She's mm-hmm. a really special person.
She is.
And he is, too. But, wow, she's always kind of felt like a soulmate to me.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
So she's a good one. But and you know I will, the only thing I'll say about polyamory, and then mm-hmm. we'll bring this maybe to a close.
Okay.
Is I think polyamory, certainly in my time,
mm-hmm.
Has been the most painful thing
mm-hmm.
that's happened mm-hmm. to our church,
mm-hmm.
and it feels like now that we're past that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, past it being re-brought up
mm-hmm.
now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure to a lot of people mm-hmm. on both sides, the hurt is still so painful
mm-hmm.
that they're not past it.
Mm-hmm.
I saw myself as very much a person in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
But that's kind of my personality. I usually can see, well, I can understand how they're feeling, and I can understand how they're feeling, and I may have a stronger feeling one side or the other, but I can usually
mm-hmm.
understand
mm-hmm.
why they're feeling a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I my hope is that
mm-hmm.
it's not something that's going to come back up. And
right.
and maybe if it came back up, maybe we're at a point that it would
mm-hmm.
be a non-issue.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people are gone, either because they left,
mm-hmm.
because they were for polyamory and they didn't like the way the last vote went, or
mm-hmm.
they were against polyamory and they
mm-hmm.
They thought there were too many people for it, or they just didn't like controversy
mm-hmm.
and they didn't like the constant fighting and they left.
Mm-hmm.
My feeling about that is, you know what, if you don't like controversy, then you probably shouldn't even be in a church or any organization. Because there's
right.
going to be controversy.
There is.
I've never heard of any church where there,
that's
where there
right.
hasn't been.
That's right.
But I will say, that was pretty
painful.
Awful.
Yeah.
That was pretty painful.
Mm-hmm.
That was a big controversy.
That was.
And part of it was probably because it went on and on.
Mm-hmm.
Some of that may have been because at that time, you know, Richard was just leaving as that was getting started.
Right.
So we either had interims
mm-hmm.
or we had a minister
mm-hmm.
who was an ineffective minister.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we didn't have great ministerial leadership
mm-hmm.
during most of that.
kind of like a perfect storm.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. maybe that would have made a difference. Maybe it wouldn't have.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But I've thought about that some.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, I don't know how, I don't know if it could have been,
yeah.
I don't know if it could have been avoided.
Right.
It's just something we
got through.
You know, we got through barely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I think it hurt us financially. I think it hurt our numbers. I think it hurt membership.
Mm-hmm.
I think it hurt us as we, I was on the search committee for Norm,
mm-hmm.
that chose Norm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know,
Boy,
I think we there were maybe candidates that we might have leaned toward
mm-hmm.
who said no, they didn't want to get in the middle of all that.
Or
we are mainly we were saying, is this something you can keep an open mind about?
Yeah.
And help us work through. And there were some ministers who said absolutely not.
Mm-hmm.
I'm against it. I think it'll be hurtful for your church.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't keep an open mind
on the
idea of polyamory
mm-hmm.
being on that group being kind of welcomed with open arms and being considered a sponsored group of the church.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my understanding of what they were asking for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the things that I pointed out to one of the polyamory leaders was, but you are welcome to come and meet here for free anytime you want to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's just that you have people here in the church saying, we don't want to say you are one of our sanctioned groups that we're supporting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, in my mind, I kind of thought, well, why isn't that enough?
Mm-hmm.
But I can see why
mm-hmm.
to that group that wasn't enough. They wanted to be fully
mm-hmm.
brought in with open arms.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know,
mm-hmm.
You know,
it was
so
a hard time.
It was.
Yeah.
So, mm-hmm. anyway, I think that maybe had we had
mm-hmm.
a minister in place who,
mm-hmm.
and Richard probably wouldn't have been the one to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think his health wasn't good enough then.
Yeah.
For him to
take that on.
Mm-hmm. So,
is there anything that you'd like to add about any of the ministers, or is there anything that you would like to say about makes you proud of your church and all? I know this is a big question, mm-hmm. but is there anything that you'd like to say?
Well, there are so many people there that
mm-hmm.
it makes me proud to know them.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes me proud. I'm a person, I think, who's lived a pretty charmed life.
Mm-hmm.
Not a wealthy life or anything like that, but
mm-hmm.
but a life of, I'm a kid who grew up in a family that I always knew loved me.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of kids don't get that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my husband and kids have been, you know, great. I
mm-hmm.
haven't had any horrible
mm-hmm.
things happen to me
mm-hmm.
with any of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm aware that for any of us, tragedy could be just around the corner,
mm-hmm.
just outside the door.
Mm-hmm.
And there are people in our church that have faced so many things,
mm-hmm.
so many hardships,
mm-hmm.
so many tragedies, and somehow keep going. Being these incredible people. And they are just a testament to me of
mm-hmm.
of the kind of human being I want to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
that's to me, that's a big part of
mm-hmm.
my being in that church and how I, you know, why I,
mm-hmm.
I'm so pleased and proud to be a part of it, is the people
mm-hmm.
that are there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the kinds of remarkable things they've done, not only in their personal lives, but in their social and work lives and
mm-hmm.
in their community lives.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
you know, they're really people there who are, I don't know what the word I'm looking for, but
Role models. Yeah, there you go.
Role models.
Yeah, I understand.
So that's good. And I will say really quickly, I know Dawn Dom's not on here, but our latest minister, I think she's been really good for us.
Mm-hmm.
I know now that there's no minister that everybody likes,
mm-hmm.
and I know that there were some people who didn't, you know, either don't like Dom's sermons or don't like this,
mm-hmm.
and I don't think Dom was perfect, but I think. Mm-hmm. At the time she came and the skills that she brought,
mm-hmm.
I think she brought skills that were
mm-hmm.
good and important for us and helped us think about and look at issues
mm-hmm.
Very carefully
mm-hmm.
and intentionally that maybe we hadn't before.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I was sorry to see her go. I think, I mean, not that I think we won't be fine. I think
mm-hmm.
we will.
Mm-hmm.
But, and I think you shouldn't stay too long. Maybe our 15-year and 17-year ministers
mm-hmm.
from not so long ago were a little long.
Mm-hmm.
But, and Dawn says that 7 years is about
mm-hmm.
average.
She did the survey.
Yeah,
she did the study.
She's
such a data person.
So, you know, so that makes sense. So that's okay.
Yeah.
So she's probably right about that.
Right.
You know, maybe 7 to 10.
Mm-hmm.
But I would have probably preferred her to stay a little bit longer.
Yeah.
But I think we'll be fine. And
mm-hmm.
It's always a challenge for a church to look for a new minister.
Mm-hmm.
And there are good things that come from that. So
Yeah.
We'll be good.
Well,
I'm optimistic.
Oh, very good. Well, that's a nice way to end our interview, and I want to thank you very much for your
welcome.
Thoughts and your time and everything you've done for the church.
Oh my! Well, that the church has done for me.
Yeah,
so
that's right.